This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
This very well, the world is a ghetto.
Wow.
Sounds like Bill Perry.
Isn't this guy from St. Louis?
He's St. Louis.
Tell me about this guy. Bring your mic down, please. Charlie.
I don't need mine down. I got soul, baby.
How long have you been in radio?
Can you get it a little closer,
I got soul,
please?
Baby.
Just get it a little closer so we can hear
I got soul, baby.
All right, so tell me about...
It's Jibs. I can talk, baby. Come
tell me on. About our recording artist here.
Phil Perry from East St. Louis, Illinois, singing an old George Benson tune called The World is a Ghetto. Funky as it wants to be. You know, we bring a lot of funk to your show on Friday.
It's good.
Frank.
No relationship to Lee Scratch Perry. Who's really old school.
Listen, Barney Fife, no relation to him.
Or Curtis Perry, power forward in the NBA.
Curtis Perry,
I don't even know who Lee Perry is.
You go way behind your back to the frozen food section with that question. Come on.
We have great texters, and they say, and Brian brought it up during the break, check Big Poppy's World Series stats, because Freeze had the records, and then Big Poppy had the most incredible World Series ever.
Because I put myself on the committee. I decided during the break that...
David, we didn't invite you, by the
David
way.
But Freeze, go ahead. No, I'm on the committee. David Freese is not a St. Louis Cardinal Hall of Famer.
And David Freese agrees with you. He told me yesterday there's no way I should get in.
You might as well put Daryl Porter in then, who was a World Series MVP back in 1982. Let's not just compare the numbers side by side. Obviously, you win a big award like that, then you put one in, you got to put the other. And Daryl Porter was my guy back in the day. I read his book. And
Snap
it's a shame,
me perfect.
It's a shame that he's no longer
death.
With us. But. You
took
know,
his life. Did
he did. I think. I believe so.
Yeah.
Yes. The book was written a long time ago. But, you know, so I think you got to have a criteria. And if you don't meet that criteria, and I think it's got to – I think the standards have to be a little stiffer than what they are right now, not just playing three full seasons.
Well,
this is something I'm going to bring up in the next meeting.
Well,
that we're not
but
just
you're
gonna,
not invited.
No, I am.
Andy's going to be outside the door, and Herzog's going to say, get the hell.
Sometimes it also brings down to this St. Louis Hall of Fame, who was really nice to the media.
Yes.
If you were a jackass to the media, I don't know if I'm going to – let's keep him out. I don't like that part of –
Well, they put McGuire in.
Well, I wonder who –
If they put him in, they should put anybody
in. Isn't McGuire in?
McGuire got in, yeah.
If he – the way he treated the media here was terrible.
Gosh.
He was the worst.
And you guys put him in?
Well, so that's disproving Charlie's theory that – if the guy was a jerk, the media wouldn't put him in.
Yeah.
Well, because Tony's on that committee, though.
Charlie, I don't agree with you there because, you know, you see that in other Hall of Fames, whether it's football, baseball, hockey, whatever. It should be what they did on the field.
That's what I'm saying, but that doesn't happen like that.
And it's interesting, Charlie, because when you mentioned Tony, is like Tony was really pushing hard for Edgar Renteria, and Whitey was really pushing hard for Tommy Herr. Mm. So, like, they have their own factions.
Did they go at it?
Tony's very respectful, and then Whitey's very blunt.
Do Ozzy and Tony get along now?
They're cordial. We had Tony on about a week and a half ago. He says, we shake hands.
What
you know they could never be close.
Ozzy and Langford, they get along? They're friends?
Yeah.
Why you bring that up?
I'm just curious.
Why would you bring that up?
Curious.
How low can you
does
go?
Does everybody get along?
You could tell you're involved with hockey.
No, I'm just saying.
Oh, my God. You punk
I'm just saying, does everybody get along?
Why'd you bring that up, though?
Whitey... Because I whatever. I, Whitey,
let's why, go to the why, update.
Whitey and Tony?
Whitey and Tony are okay. Yeah. Okay. Whitey lets it all hang out, and Tony, you know, likes to listen to him, and he's respectful.
Give him a glass of wine
first. And how's Whitey doing?
Amazing.
Is he still up
still
there?
Still fishing?
Still, I don't know if he fishes, but sharp as heck, watches every game from start to finish, knows every player.
Can he still break
Whitey.
The game down somewhat?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Love Whitey.
Yeah.
And I love Tony, too.
My rat.
I was the first producer for the Sunday Talk with Tony show.
Is that right? On KMOX?
Every Sunday we hung out together for like 3 or 4 years. Every Sunday doing
what
that
What did
show.
He do with you? Tell me this
he
one.
Loved it. He was cool, man.
When you're a little kid, he patted you on the head
Tony's
or something?
Tony's an OG, man. Tony's cool.
What's cool. OG?
Is there a little, what does OG mean to you? Old guy?
No. I love Tony La Russa. I think he's one of the greatest people who's ever
he's
come
a, You know he's my guy. You know he's my buddy.
That was the famous press conference.
Why? Because he let you sit next to him?
No, I used to go. No. Here we go again.
Like
here we go again. He didn't even know who you were. He thought your name was Lee Strickland. He didn't know who the hell you were.
Lee Strickland.
He's like, oh,
hey, that's Lee Strickland.
He's like, oh, there's Tuna, the guy who does the overnights.
So Bernie Miklas can confirm this. When I didn't come into the clubhouse at games, Tony used to ask, Where's Charlie at? I would go in Tony's office.
I've never heard him say that.
We would talk about the NBA and how much he used to like Allen Iverson. I mean, that's Tony.
Really?
He's just not a baseball guy. He's an NBA guy also.
Okay. All right, let's get
to
the
Lee.
Lee Strickland.
Hey, Tony, can I sit next to you? Tony,
no,
can you sit next
no,
to
he requested me to sit next to
him. He did. He did request.
He requested me to
easy.
Sit next to him.
He also let the,
by
he
the way,
also let the guy Calvin ask
at?
The first question at his press conference.
Well, that was set up by the media. Okay. Where were you at for that press conference? It was the final one.
I wasn't there.
You wasn't there.
I was probably looking at stats for my next committee meeting for the Cardinal Hall of Fame. I'm ready to roll with that. Tony Herb, by the way, yes, he's definitely a Cardinal Hall of Famer.
Yes.
Who's on the ballot? Who's on the ballot for the next one?
I think. Well, this one going on right now.
Is my guy Chris
is
Carpenter
Hernandez is going to get in. Tudor's on this one.
Hmm. Mm. The media did the media fully like Tudor TV side.
Well, I wasn't around then, but that Tudor was not a real
likable
guy.
Uh-uh.
But he was
his teammates were afraid of him.
Were they?
Isringhausen is on this one, the all-time saves leader. I don't think he's going to get in this time. Brian, I'm thinking, who's the guy that's getting in with Keith Hernandez? Gosh, I put the ballot together.
Does Isringhausen belong in?
I think eventually he'll get in, but not this year. It's Hernandez, and there's one other no-brainer that was real close last year. Oh, Scott Rolen.
Oh,
yeah,
okay. Scotty Rolen. Yeah. What about, is Carpenter in yet?
Chris Carpenter is in, yes.
He's my favorite of
you
all time.
You got to be popular. That helps you a lot.
Well, he wasn't actually Mr. Gracious
he
either with the
not.
Media.
No, but, he,
but his
you,
demeanor,
you couldn't overlook him, though.
Oh, no.
What he did on the field.
His demeanor on the mound.
Tough.
Kind of what Jack Flaherty's is right now.
Really?
You probably
Bob
like Jack Flaherty, don't you?
Yeah. Brother?
Yeah.
You think Flaherty has that same
He does.
Hardcore?
He's got a lot of Carpenter in him, man.
Well, you got Gibson, Carpenter.
Yeah.
So two of the toughest. Two of them was mean, too.
All right, let's get to the main event. Andy, just a quick thought that's not real important. But
how are you?
Just
sure.
loving, and we've gotten some texts on this,
yeah.
Craig Berube off the ice.
I love it.
Chirping at the,
I love
the Jets.
It. People don't realize his relationship with the players. And I think obvious people realize the impact that he's had on this roster. But part of it, he is a player's coach. He brings a level of credibility. I'm not one of those that suggests you have to have played in the National Hockey League to be a coach. But it certainly helps. And especially when you played his role and played over 1,000 games in the league, doing what he did, that's almost unheard of, Frank. I mean, guys don't play 1,000 games doing what he did. I mean, you look at Tony Twist's career numbers and Kelly Chase's career numbers. I mean, these guys who fought for
What do you think they played roughly game-wise?
They played somewhere in the 300 game range.
You so know, there's maybe, not many enforcers for 1,000 games.
Maybe just north of 300, 400 games, somewhere in that range. So guys don't play 1,000 games. Now, you can stick around and you can play 10 or 11 years, but you're not in the lineup every single game. For this guy to do what he did is unbelievable. And believe me, I've had conversations with him about this privately. I mean, he's a very confident guy. He knows he's tough. Okay, and so in Winnipeg, it's an old school arena where you have to walk across the ice. You don't just go to the dressing room behind the bench. And he's in the middle of the action. He's emotional. He's feeling the intensity. And when you have guys from the other team who are chirping at the end of the game, you can be sure that he's going to get involved. Now, he's not going to go after somebody and get in a fight. Nobody on the other team would be dumb enough to want to fight Craig Berube. But if you don't think that impacts the team and the team doesn't absolutely love what he did and how engaged he is, you're kidding yourself, man. This guy is unbelievable. He's broken so many curses, Frank, with this organization in terms of some of the decisions that he's been willing to make for the better of the team. And we all know they're not in this situation right now without him.
And his team has totally taken on his personality, which helps him out.
Well, I don't know if they've totally taken on his personality.
On the ice, I mean.
Maybe. I mean, you know, I mean, they don't. I don't know. It depends how you want to look at it. I think they play harder.
I mean, tough and hard. That's what I'm talking about.
You know, they got to listen. They're going to have a little more pushback probably. Now they won the game in game one, but you know, Winnipeg was probably the more physical team without a doubt in game one. I think they had 36 hits in the game, but that's not the Blues' personality. Well, that's not their makeup. That's not who they are. But hockey is not just about. It's not really about tactics, to be honest with you. I mean, every team has their system. He made some tweaks to their system in terms of how they play defensively. Don't be fooled with the back of his hockey card for how smart of a hockey man he is. This guy totally gets the game. He's current with the game. I've had conversations with him. He doesn't even care about fighting anymore. The fighting is secondary. He doesn't care about that type of stuff. He could care less if there was no more fighting in the game anyway. But just in terms of how hard he has this team playing, it's not just about tactics. It's who can play harder on a consistent basis than the other team? You got to have some game changers with it, which they do. But he has this team being the hardest working team almost every single time they touch the ice.
What's the Blues' Achilles heel in the playoffs? Because most of the fans now have already put them in to win this first series.
Well, the Achilles heel, I mean, listen, they played one game. Mm-hmm. So we just got to let it play out. I mean, the only issue that I was concerned about down the stretch, and then it changed actually down the stretch, so before we got to the stretch run, was would they have enough secondary scoring because they weren't getting enough. Their secondary scoring was coming from their defense. And I think they led the National Hockey League in goals scored by the defensemen. Vince Dunn had 9 since January 1st. Alex Pietrangelo had 9 since January 1st. Both those players, I think, top 6 among defensemen in the NHL from the turn of the calendar on. But then they started getting that secondary scoring. Pat Maroon started coming on. Tyler Bozak started coming on. Robert Thomas was coming on. You know, it wasn't just the O'Reilly, Tarasenko, Shen, Perron show. You started to see other players get involved, Ivan Barbashev and some of these guys. So they answered that question. I don't really see an Achilles heel, to be honest with you.
And the Maroon moment the other night, and he's had quite a few down the stretch here, was unbelievable. The pass was great.
Oh, the pass was great. I mean, but he was great.
Yeah.
I mean, people don't realize he makes it look so easy how he can just pick pucks up off the wall on some of these hard rims behind the net. Like, that's not easy to do or as easy as he makes it look. This guy controls every single shift, his ability to protect the puck. I said before the season about Pat Maroon in terms of describing his game, he has a brand to his game. Not many guys in the world play his brand. I mean, how many guys can you think of that play like him, right? There aren't too many in the National Hockey League who play his brand of hockey, and obviously it's been very useful. And, you know, I'll tell you a quick story. And I've known Pat for a long time and known the family for a long time. We were supposed to do something with him. A sit down after practice the other day, and he kind of motioned for me to come over. His eyes were all watery, and he said, "Hey, I just learned my grandfather just passed away." He hadn't even told the coach yet, you know. So, kind of reading some of the Facebook posts of his mom and dad and his brothers. I mean, this was a guy who was very close with the entire family. They lost their grandfather, so, and then he's got to jump on a plane just a few hours after learning that. That couldn't have been easy to leave his family behind. But I mean, for him to have the focus, to play with the focus and then come through the way that he did. That's a great story.
You had me laughing last night. You were talking about Pat Maroon almost getting into an altercation with Lauer. And you said, no, you don't do that.
No, because here's the thing. If Pat Maroon is going to get in a fight, now we're talking playoffs, and I guarantee you Craig Berube is telling him the same thing, and I bet you Pat Maroon already knows this. Maroon's played more playoff games than people realize. He went to the conference final a few years ago with Anaheim, playing with Getzlaff and Perry. I mean, he's put up some pretty good numbers in the playoffs. He played in the playoffs last year as well with New Jersey. So he's got some playoff experience. He knows how to play in the postseason. But if you're Pat Maroon and you're actually going to fight, it better be somebody that you want to take off the ice from their team for 5 minutes. You don't worry about Adam Lowry.
Yeah.
Okay? So it better be a Bufflin. It better be somebody like that, Shifley, you know, who's not going to fight him, or Wheeler, or somebody like that. Somebody that you're saying, okay, we'll make that trade. If you're going to take that guy off the ice for 5 minutes, then – you know, whatever. But we don't see too many fights in the playoffs anyway. But I don't think he's going to waste his time fighting a fourth-line guy like Adam Lowry, who's a good player.
I know the Blues have plenty of good young players in their system, but if Maroon continues to play well, will he get an extension?
This is where you make your money. It's in the postseason. And I'm not going to suggest that he's going to get some long-term deal or get a boatload of money. So he'd probably be looking at a one-year extension again. But if he continues to play the way that he is now and the way he played down the stretch, I don't think there's any question. And I think that was the conversation that Doug Armstrong and Pat Maroon had. Let's do a one-year deal, and you do what we think you can do and play the way we think you can, then we'll revisit it, and they'll reward him. And if he continues to do this, I wouldn't have said this several months ago for the first half of the season, but what he's done over the course of the last 8 weeks or so and now into the playoffs, I think Pat Maroon could be the same player and have the same impact next season.
Binnington in game one was out of sight.
Unbelievable. I mean, just incredible. I mean, you can think in your head right now of 3 or 4 just amazing saves that he made on breakaways. You know, Patrick Laine scores that first goal. You find yourself down 1-0, and you're not scoring in the first 2 periods of play. You better be getting saves because they fall down, fall behind 2 goals on the road in that building. That's going to be a tough situation to come back from. By the way, the Winnipeg Jets, that's the 6th time this season that they've lost – when leading, that they've lost in regulation when leading after 2 periods of play. And so that's tied for the most in the National Hockey League. They actually lost 10 times on the year when you include some of the overtime losses, when leading after two periods of play, and a lot of those losses came down the stretch. So for whatever reason, they tend to stumble and stub their toe in the third period, you know, when they have the lead. That's not the sign of a team, you know, that you want to see, you know, in the playoffs. You want to be able to close games out. But, you know, Jordan Binnington, you know, we all know that he answered the bell. People wondered, listen, this guy's 25 years old. He's not 21. He's on the ice with guys his age. He's a confident player. He grew up as a big-time prospect, number one goaltender drafted in the OHL, played for Canada in the World Junior Championships, Memorial Cup, and so on. And he's been a good player down in the minor leagues. He knows he belongs at this level. And now the rest of the world is starting to see that as well.
His second period was just outstanding, man.
I mean, the whole game. I mean, his save that he made at the end of the game. Mark Scheifele, their most dangerous offensive player. I know, you know, Blake Wheeler led the team in scoring. He had 70, 71 assists somewhere in that range. I know Patrick Laine is a guy who could score goals, although he wasn't as good this season as he was the two previous years. He had 30 goals this year still. Mark Scheifele, to me, is their most dangerous offensive weapon. We all saw the big save at the end of the game that Binnington made on him with just a few seconds left. That was Shifley's first shot on goal in the entire game.
Wow.
So they pretty much shut him down. Of course, he got involved, got tangled up with Binnington early in the game and took the penalty. I just love the way the Blues stuck with it over the course of the game. They were down by a goal. You knew they were just one shot away from tying it up, and getting that goal from Perron early was huge. And Tyler Bozak's a proven player. He's a guy who's been around for a long time. Played 9 years with one organization, and you can see the maturity in his game, right? Just how mature
yes.
he plays. You saw that, obviously, with six shots on goal, and then it came through with a big goal.
You know, there was quite a shopping spree July 1st when you think about it.
Well,
Perron, Bozak, and the trade for O'Reilly.
It was, and that's why, I mean, Doug Armstrong deserves some credit, right? I mean, when you bring those players on board, it took some time, we all know, for whatever reason. The team didn't play well in the first half of the season, and some other teams struggled too. It gave the Blues an opportunity to catch up. But that's why I said Winnipeg had no excuse not winning this division. No excuse whatsoever. They had 114 points last year. That was reduced to 99 this year. And when you see a team struggle down the stretch, it makes you wonder what is going on. They played well. I expect them – listen, every game is going to be like that. You're not going to see blowout victories. You're not going to see one team – defeat the other by three or more goals, something like that. These are going to be close games, but the Blues getting that experience, playing in a close game on the road, is only going to help them moving forward.
All right, we'll take a short time out. When we come back, Charlie's newfound respect for Jack Flaherty and the reason why. Also why it's so tough to coach in the SEC, but Konzo Martin could be getting some help in the near future. We're broadcasting live from the Schnucks in Dardenne. And we want you to come by and try some of this Frick's ham. They've been around since 1896, and this ham is outstanding. Maryville University sponsors the phone lines. Each new student is assigned a life coach who is a knowledgeable resource for academic advising, mentoring, campus networking, and career guidance, all things Maryville. Also want to thank the Bomberito people. Bomberito Automotive Group sponsors the show content. They have Audi in West County, Infinities in West County, Cadillacs in St. Peter's, Buicks in West County, GMCs, Chevys in South County, Ford in Hazelwood, Honda in Hazelwood, Toyota in Hazelwood. There's a reason they sell the most cars in the state of Missouri every year. We'll be right back.